quick mention about something that caught my attention here. There's an industrial area in the south part of Stockholm, Sweden. It's a former industrial area, probably kind of run down. And it's now home to what's being called a very ambitious environmental project. There are 25 neighborhoods. This must be a big area. 25 neighborhoods being built entirely out of wood. Now, I guess that's a new idea, but to me, it's pretty old school. So the finding was that developers can build homes and businesses and other buildings at twice the speed compared with concrete-based construction, okay? And this is going to be called a wood city, quote, the wood city. It comes after research found that building with wood instead of concrete and steel in 80% of new buildings would help offset half of Europe's construction industry emissions. Okay, I just want to say duh. I mean, I think it's great that they're doing this, but I think, okay, well, you know, that kind of makes a lot of sense. Anyway, let's see if we can make some more sense here talking with Jeffrey Wise. Jeffrey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, thank you, Ed.
Jeff's a poli-sci prof at Des Moines Area Community College. He's also working on a book. It's a comic book, or what do you got?
Yeah, I've been researching. I call it my so-called book. I've been researching for some time presidential republics as a form of government, what we know as separation of powers, and in general, the separation of powers presidential republic does not have the best record in the world. In fact, parliamentary republics fare much better.
So define presidential republic for us.
Okay, so a presidential republic is known as separation of powers. What you have is a president and a legislature that is independently elected. So like what we have in the United States, the legislative branch writes law, the executive branch enforces law, judiciary interprets law. And there's two...
Sounds good to me.
Yeah, there's two fundamental challenges for presidential republics. One is that they suffer from consistent gridlock. When you have...
We see that.
Absolutely. One of the problems historically for presidential republics is both the head of the legislative assembly and the president can make a legitimate claim for power. And so when there are... battles between the legislative and executive, for example, Maduro and Juan Guaido in Venezuela a few years ago in their presidential republic, both can claim a mandate from the voters. And oftentimes then the military steps in. Oftentimes they step in on the side of the
executive.
And
we have a coup.
You have a coup. Now, what we've seen is that during the Cold War, presidential republics typically were toppled by coups, or I suppose what Malcolm X would say, by the bullet. But now autocracies are being established one by one in presidential republics through elections, or what is called competitive authoritarianism. Well,
and isn't that what happened in Weimar Germany back in the 1931? Hitler didn't stage a coup. He got elected to power. There was some chicanery involved. But
yeah, I mean,
to become a dictator.
Yeah, it was post Weimar. It was a semi-presidential republic, and of course, he was appointed chancellor by Hindenburg, in part because they thought that he could control the factions within parliament and give the conservatives a majority, and they also felt they could control him. And then, of course, Hindenburg dies. But even in that case, what the Nazis exploited was Article 48 of the Weimar Constitution, which essentially said a president could operate under some circumstances with emergency powers. And so what we've seen in presidential republics, so many of them are in Africa and South America. Africa has had the problem of presidents that stay forever, Mugabe, presidents for life. In fact, 21 of the 25 longest running heads of government in the world are presidents. almost none of them were prime ministers, interestingly enough. And South America had the opposite problem where they would have presidents for life. And so many of those countries amended their constitutions for just one term for president. And they've struggled
to limit it to one term.
To limit it. And
then you lose somebody who might be on the roll and doing some good stuff.
Well, there you go. And constitutions and are oftentimes by definition vague. I mean, in the case of the United States, our Constitution is exceptionally vague. And so presidents in particular, because they have the army, you know, what was called the power of the sword, the power of the absurd also, but the power of the sword by Alexander Hamilton, they're able to exploit emergency powers. In fact, Erdogan in Turkey took a semi-presidential republic, which is really a hybrid. It has parliament and presidential. He took that a few years ago and turned it into a presidential republic when he and the Justice and Development Party wanted one-party control, which is the other side of presidential republics.
And Erdogan
on one side, you have gridlock. On the other side, if you have three branches and one party controls all three branches, you can have one-party rule.
Right. And, you know, again, in theory, tell me if I'm wrong, in theory, if you've got a presidential republic where you've got a separation between the executive branch, the legislative branch, and of course, the judicial branch, that's a pretty good set of checks and balances. So what's wrong with that?
Yeah, in theory, and it's easily exploited when one party controls all three branches, because then you don't have any checks and you don't have any balances. So this is something that African countries in particular after independence adopted the presidential republic model, or semi-presidential if they were colonies of France, which in Africa, they're mostly, they lean heavily with presidential. And so many of these countries are, even to this day, since colonialism, one-party states, because the independence party was the most popular. It also, it varies with presidential republics, because a lot of South American countries have tried to reform their legislative branches by having multi-member districts and proportional representation voting, so you can have more more parties. In the case of a country like the United States, where you have plurality voting, which is winner take all, right now the Republican Party behaves like a political party in a parliamentary republic. In other words, well, it's a personality cult, number one. You know, if you speak against the leader, you're exiled. So that's not unusual in terms of the parties do become personality cults. But aside from that, people want to have the courage of their convictions. The problem is, in a presidential republic, if you become a party that votes party line, like most parties are in a parliamentary republic, you have gridlock all of the time, because you have to have compromise. The Democrats may have a problem with this too, as they're starting to break up into the Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez wing of the party, and et cetera. If the Democrats aren't able to integrate their social movements that are under the progressive banner, they're also going to disintegrate as a party.
So it seems to me that, you know, again, if obviously there's plenty of flaws with the U.S. system. I mean, the Electoral College, where no matter how close a vote might be in a state, the entire state's delegation goes to one candidate.
Yeah,
that's a problem.
Yeah, it's not
all
Democratic.
The different steps that have been taken to suppress the vote.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and there's a list. There's got to be 100 different ways in which that's happened across the country.
And the Senate. I mean, the Democratic Party cannot win a Senate majority in general without winning 4 to 6% victory in terms of the national election. I mean, in other words, the Democratic Senate candidates are consistently on a national basis winning more votes than their counterparts, but yet they're losing 5 or 6 seats and they have the minority. That's not democracy.
It's highly unusual. And tied
in
the Electoral College too.
And it's absolutely tied to the Electoral College. Both of those are, and the other thing the United States has is we have judges for life, and nearly all of the more democratic country in the world have mandatory retirement ages for judges, or they have like 5-year terms, 10-year terms, 15-year terms. So this is another anti-majority institutional part of our own government, which makes a presidential republic, which I think is already compromised, even more challenging in terms of voters.
And you've pointed out that, the U.S. Has been around since 1776, 250 years, and still going.
Yep.
But signs of cracking. I mean, we saw big cracks back in the 1850s with the resulting of the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
But this almost feels like a bigger crack.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Well, I think Stephen Levitsky him with Andrew Zablot, they wrote a book called Minority Rule, and I think competitive authoritarianism is what we're looking
competitive
at.
Competitive authoritarianism.
Yeah, competitive authoritarianism.
That sounds like a contradiction.
Well, it's the way that autocracies are unfolding around the world. You see it in India, you see it in Turkey, you see it in Russia, you see it in Hungary, you see it in El Salvador. What that means is you do have multiple parties, you do have competitive elections, but at the same time, one party is able to weaponize the state and to create fear. And in an attempt to take over universities, in take over media, in an attempt to take over the institutions of civil society. And that's what we're seeing
every
day.
The Kennedy Center, even.
Yeah, that's what we're seeing here.
Hey, so yeah, you wrote something in a recent message that the only serious check left is the federal courts, with the people, the citizens of the U.S. is still the other potential check.
Probably the most serious, not the only one, but the most serious threat.
There is some level of politicization in the court system, and as you pointed out, the judges are judges for life. But we've been seeing a lot of court rulings, including by the U.S. Supreme Court. Consider the 9-0 ruling against Trump's decision to deport Abrego Garcia to the mega prison in El Salvador. I mean, we've seen some pushback from the courts.
Yes,
is that likely to continue? Or
yeah, I think so. And really, because there's so many federal court judges, people forget that this current president only appointed about 18% of all federal judges. So, and even a lot of the judges he appointed are pushing back on what political scientists often called lawfare, you know, which is essentially what's the word of the Peruvian president in the 1930s, Bonvardes, I think was his name. He said, "For my friends, everything; for my enemies, the law." you know, lawfare. You know,
there's a lot of pushback. I mean, Trump is also ignoring court rulings. To what extent is he going to get away with that? I mean, the federal government, the executive branch, has the military; the courts don't.
Yeah.
So to what extent is that going to, that's going to eventually lead to a constitutional crisis, which I think we're close to, don't you?
Yeah, we're probably pretty close. I mean, because the Attorney General's office is who would control the federal marshals, who would enforce the law. But the Attorney General's office right now is engaging in lawfare, right? I mean, giving a deal to the city mayor of New York City that if you cooperate with the Trump administration, we'll drop charges against you.
Right,
and of course, which has dozens of people resigning, So the people in civil society who want to uphold the law and the rule of law, oftentimes, as we see, you know, are resigning. Now, the good news is if you have somebody like Putin in Russia, who's extremely popular, you know, who has maybe 70-80% approval, or when Chavez was in Venezuela, you know, he had that level of approval. It's much more difficult to dissent against a leader, a head of government, head of state, if they have that level of popularity. But that's not the case here.
No,
that's
Trump's
not the
approval case in the United rating States. Is just above 40%, and it continues to decline.
Yep.
And we see massive demonstrations from one end of the country to the other. We see defections among his supporters. I shared one earlier in this program. So,
which is an important check.
Yeah. So to what extent do you think that the pushback coming from the American people will be enough to prevent our presidential republic from becoming like one of the autocracies in Africa, say, or formerly in South America?
I mean, time will tell, because, you know, part of the billionaire class, you know, in the United States, Bezos, et cetera, you know, like money more than they like democracy. A lot of expensive law firms like money more than they like democracy. And at the same time, there's also a lot of wealthy people who would probably prefer democracy, and a lot of law firms that would also, and universities like Harvard that will not sell out freedom like Columbia did.
Yeah.
So you know, it's a mixed bag. And I think that dissent is growing, and it's growing quickly, given that it's only been 100 days. The demonstrations are getting bigger. They're getting more varied, much bigger and more varied than they were during his last term. Although his last term was far different, because the Republican Party didn't really want him to be president. They didn't know what to do with him. And so he appointed more establishment figures. And this time around, he has total control of the party, so much so that a member of Krangas will not speak ill against him, or they will be threatened or with violence or exiled from the party, et cetera.
Well, at least Senator Grassley is pushing back a little bit.
Yeah, no comment.
One more question. Do you think Trump will do away with free elections?
We don't really know.
We don't know.
I don't think any president has that power because states govern elections according to the Constitution. So I don't know what the constitutional trek.
I mean, you can go to the Trump website and buy swag talking about Trump 2028.
Yeah, and discussion about a third term. I don't see a way that could be done through the courts or any other way.
That would violate the 22nd Amendment.
Yeah, and elections are still the authority of the state, so I don't know how that would be wrested control. I mean, it's a big government takeover of attempt at a takeover over a lot of institutions like universities, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we will see now whether the Bill of Rights, the First Amendment, you know, our Fourth Amendment rights, you know, all of these things are strong enough to withhold what's called competitive authority.
Hey, as long as we've got our Second Amendment, Jeffrey, we're good, right? Kidding.